Welcome to Carefree and Conscious with me, Suzanne Wilson, the Carefree Medium. If you enjoy this type of content, like this video, subscribe to this channel, and share with a friend. Today on Carefree and Conscious, Grief to Growth, Planted Not Buried with Brian Smith, author, certified grief educator, and positive intelligence coach. Brian had a lifelong extreme fear of physical death. He conquered his fear of physical death through his research, exploration, and unfortunately, an extraordinary family tragedy. Brian has a free gift for Carefree and Conscious followers. Go to grief2growth.com/carefree and claim your free meditation to get unstuck. And now, Carefree and Conscious, Grief to Growth. Welcome, Brian. We're happy that you're here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Suzanne. I appreciate it. It's great to see you.
It's good to see you too. I'm really happy. Really happy that you're here. So you want to jump right into some big stuff? Because that's what we do.
That's what we do.
It is. So you say grief to growth, and you talk about knowing yourself and knowing your purpose, like discovering it, letting it unfold day by day. Why do we have to grieve? What in your line of thinking is the purpose of grief? Why is grief necessary?
Yeah, that is a good question. That is a big question. So I'm gonna try to answer as best I can. And I want to start by saying I'm a very rational person. I try to be a very logical person. I'm an engineer. This woo-woo, I'm not, I believe it 100%, but I do it because I've examined it. So when it comes to the purpose of grief or the purpose of pain, we can either decide that, okay, it's designed and it's part of the plan, which I do believe that when we come here, that is part of the plan for planet Earth, that we do have things that happen. Whether everything is designed or not, I've actually been debating this with one of my mentors the last couple of days, and I always come down to the so what question. Does it really matter? So I like to look at things both ways. So let's assume that everything is designed, which a lot of near-death experiencers tell us, that everything happens for a reason, everything's in divine order. If you believe that, great. But if you don't believe that, then why does this bad thing happen to me? Well, that's where we can give things meaning. That's where we can give things purpose. So take, for example, my daughter passing away. I can either say that this was a terrible, tragic accident, and I live in a universe that has no meaning, that doesn't care about me, and I can make that assumption. Or I can say, I believe this has meaning. Or I can say, I'm going to give this meaning. So for me, it's like the third option I can always do. I can always make meaning in something. I can always take it and use it as a learning opportunity. I can use it as something to give me strength or help me to grow. Or I can use it as something to inspire me. So that's the choice that we can make. So
okay, let's back up 1 second, because this is really good stuff. You have choices that you can take the tragedy along with. And those choices, say that again.
So you can, I said, I like to look at everything all the ways, right? All the way possible. Right? So first of all, it could be
your engineering is coming into play here, dude.
Yeah. It's meaningless or it's random. That's choice number one. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Right. I can choose to believe that. How does that affect my life? Okay. That means there's no purpose to it. I'm not going to look for purpose to it. I could just sit down and die.
Okay.
I could say, okay, I can, everything is planned. You know, God, myself, my guides, whatever, they plan this. I think that's a wonderful belief that if people have that, but not everybody can get there. So what if it's something in between? What if there's something that it's designed in the system, we're going to have pain, but I can take this pain and I can make something out of it. I can transmute this pain into something else. That is a choice that we can make no matter what we believe. It doesn't matter what our belief system is. I have that choice. So I can choose to say, I'm going to use this to inspire me. I can choose to say, I'm going to use this to strengthen me so I grow. Or I can choose to say, I'm going to get some knowledge out of this, something that I didn't know before. So that is a choice that we can all make regardless of what we believe.
Okay. All right. That's pretty clear. So no religious beliefs, no convictions required to use some tragedy or disappointment or grief or letdown for your growth. What's the next step?
Well, once you've decided that you've made that choice, then it, and this is all easier said than done. I want to start by saying this too. And you know, it's funny because I remember, and I don't think we said this on the air to people. You and I have known each other for about 7 years, and you were the first medium reading I ever had. It was gifted to me. It was my first experience with the medium, and it was so wild. I still remember it to this day. I'll never forget it. I felt like I'd known you like my whole life because you were just telling me about myself. And I'm like, I'm going to say, she doesn't know me. She doesn't know this stuff.
Yeah, I remember that was set up blind. I was told, this guy's real analytical. We got to make this as blind as possible. I'm like, I'm always blind with it, you know?
Yeah, it was awesome. But I remember you saying to me that Shayna's my daughter who passed away. You said, Shayna says that this had to happen. And you said something to me like, I'm glad I'm not in the room with you because you'd probably hit me. And I was less than a year in to my grief, and it was brand new to me. It was a brand new concept to me, but I've taken that. And like I said, I remember that to this day. So for people that are really early in the grief, this might be a difficult concept, but what I try to tell someone, and I was talking, this is an example I always use. I got fired from a job many years ago. And when I got fired from the job, of course, it was a terrible thing. My daughter was 9 months old. I'm out of a job. And I'm thinking this is a really bad thing. Well, long story short, I ended up taking another job, an opportunity that I was scared to take before because it was a big risk. But because I was fired, I took the risk. I started working for a guy who was an entrepreneur. I learned from him. I started my own business. And that's the reason why I'm sitting here today. If I hadn't been fired from that job, this would have never happened. So the older we get, the more we can look for examples in our own lives that these things can be for good, even though they seem like they're bad.
Okay. Well, you've said before that you felt that everything that has happened in your life, all the major points in your life, prepared you for Shayna's transition. How is that possible? And what got you to that conclusion? Because that's the growth. You didn't wake up like that the day after.
Yeah. I forgot who it was that said it. I should remember so I can give them credit. But someone said, I think it was Nietzsche, said, life only makes sense looking backwards, but must be lived looking forward.
Yeah.
I'm 61 years old now, so I have a lot of history behind me. And I can look back, and I just gave you one real quick example. But I can look back at all the events of my life and see how one thing led to another that led to me where I am now. So with Shayna's passing, just to give you another really quick example, I grew up with terrible thanatophobia. I was scared of death. I was scared to death of death. I had panic attacks. I would lay awake in bed all night. It was horrible for 30, 40 years. But that led me to the point where I studied everything I could find out about the afterlife, near-death experiences, mediumship, scientific research, philosophy, quantum mechanics, all that stuff. I studied it like crazy. Never having any inkling that my daughter would pass away suddenly at the age of 15. So I believe that led me to the point that when Shayna passed, I had that body of knowledge that protected me from at least that one part of grief. There are two parts to grief. One is we grieve for the loss of the life of our loved one because we grieve the life that they're not going to have. The other thing is we grieve ourselves because we're going to be missing them. I knew that Shayna was okay. And that reading I had with you verified it. And I've gotten many, many verifications since then. But Shayna coming through so strong, I didn't have that part of the grief. That half of the grief, I didn't have to deal with.
That's amazing. And we also miss who we were with that person, right? But we're still that person. It's still there. And you've been able to tap into continuing to be Shayna's dad, and you have a child here on earth too. Mm-hmm. Did the synchronicities and if you can share a couple of those synchronicities and things coming not through a medium, but directly from Shayna, help you continue that relationship? And at what point did that become like, that's what I accept. That's got to be enough for now.
Yeah. Wow. Well, the synchronicities, there's so many. I can give you a couple of really quick ones. The first one that happened, Shayna passed in June 24th. It was in August and we were on a trip. It was the three of us, my daughter, Kayla, my wife, Tawana, and myself. It was our first trip without Shayna. You know, it was our first trying to get back to feeling out what our family unit was like now. And so we had gone on a trip and I walk every morning. So I got up that morning, went for a walk by myself. And I was having a rough day because I'm like, I wake up in the hotel room and there's Kayla in the other bed and Shayna's not there for the first time ever. So I said, Shayna, I really need for you to be here with me today if I'm going to make it through this day, you know, because I have to be here for Tawana and for Kayla. So I said, you know, send me a sign. And I had asked her before, if you send me dimes, you know, you find pennies all over the place, send me dimes. So we're getting in the van to catch the ferry to go across this island we were going to go to. And my wife and Kayla get in the front seat and I bend my head down to get in the back seat. And as I bend my head down underneath the seat, there's a single dime sitting there. And I was like, wow, okay. And I, again, I'm an engineer. I'm very analytical. I'm like, it's not a quarter. It's not a dollar bill. You know, it's a dime. And it's just at the time I needed it from her. And since then, there's been all kinds of other synchronicities and signs, cardinals, butterflies, meeting different people, you know, all kinds of stuff. She comes through mediums, professional mediums. She also comes through other people who aren't professionals. They'll just call me up and say, Shayna gave me a message for you. And, you know, she delivers messages that way. So in the past 7 years, there's been a lot of them.
That's fantastic. And is there anything that you would advise people to do to be able to, like, just spot the synchronicities or the signs? Like, what do we need to do? What do we need to shift to be able to capture those? Because I feel a strong conviction that everyone gets them from someone on the other side, whether it's a guide, an angel, or a bunch of loved ones. What do we need to do to spot them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you literally wrote the book on that. So I feel like I can't really cover all that in this short period of time, but the number one thing is being open to it. One thing is keeping your eyes open and looking for it. And if you feel like it's a sign, don't ask somebody, was this a sign? It was a sign.
Yes.
Accept it.
God bless you for saying that.
But
don't ask the whole world if it was a sign. Did you hear that, folks?
But again, I'm a very analog. So I'll say, what are the odds of this? Like, we have a certain song that we played at Shayna's, you know, her life celebration, and it's been our song for a long time. And that song comes on at certain periods of time. Or I don't ever turn the radio on, but if I do happen to turn the radio on, the song comes on, and I'll say, okay, did she tell the DJ to do that? Did she tell me to turn the radio on? And you can pick apart something until you can tear it apart. So the first thing I would say to people is accept it, you know? And what I've learned over the last 7 years is the universe is a much more magical place than most of us believe it is. We've been taught to believe the universe is mechanical, that there's no input from the spirit world. But again, as a scientist, that doesn't make any sense. There is a spirit world. There is some sort of connection. We don't understand what the connection is. We don't understand exactly how it works. But I can tell you from experience, it absolutely 100% works. Because things have happened that cannot be explained any other way other than this was something that came from outside of our universe.
Yeah, and there's a theory that when you're in spirit, you don't have total dominion over time, but there's some wiggle room where you've got time to see, oh my gosh, I just had a big flash of light over here when I said that. So it's like, I wonder, yep, I think she's here right now. But it's like they can see where you are, where you're going, and get out in front and see what can be orchestrated. And I always say that spirit communication is like water. It travels the path of least resistance. So I'm not surprised at all that even non-mediums will call you up and say, hey, you know, I got this hit from your girl, and that it would be spot on because she's learned how to work the system. And there are those whose job it is to help get messages through. She's probably charmed a bunch of them. And then she's learned how to do it herself. And she's like, she's got the afterlife wired. What about people who are in the deep grief right now and they don't have their center yet? You're in what's a positive intelligence coach? We know what a grief educator is, your grief educator is, but how would you coach a person that's so deep in the grief and they want the signs, but maybe their grief is sort of like almost like a shield, like the energy can't come through. How do you handle that as a coach?
Well, there aren't any set stages to grief, but there are definitely kind of phases that we go through. So the first phase I call the white knuckle phase. That's where you're just hanging on. That's when you're just like, can I get out of bed? Can I get myself dressed? You know, can I eat? So I tell people, be patient with yourself. When you're in that phase, I'm not talking to you about gratitude. I'm not talking to you about growth. I'm talking to you about survival. So we talked earlier before we started recording, we talked about gratitude. And I want to go talk about that more.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Bring it.
The thing about gratitude, I realize, as I've been doing, I've done a couple hundred podcast interviews, and I've been talking to people, they're like, you can't tell someone deep in grief to have gratitude because your mind, your brain is literally damaged and you cannot see anything positive. Right. So I have advice for people that are in that stage. One is you can use your body. So feel something that feels good in your body. So take a warm bath, or if you're lying in bed, or take a hot shower and just feel the water going over your body. You mentioned positive intelligence. We use something in positive intelligence called PQ reps, where we'll focus on a body sensation. So just rubbing two fingers together and feeling that, or rubbing the hand, fingers of one hand against the palm of the other hand, or looking at something and really taking in the color, body sensations can be helpful to ground yourself. Another practice that's really good when you're early in grief and you can't, I do my gratitude practice in the morning. So I wake up in the morning, I say three things I'm grateful for before I get out of bed, at least. So I do that every morning because it actually trains my neural pathways. It trains my brain to look for positive things, and you have to retrain your brain. When you're in grief, I say do the opposite. When you go to bed at night, think of three things that you accomplished that day. Did you get out of bed? Did you take a shower? Did you have a meal? Did you go grocery shopping? And give yourself credit for those little things. It's baby steps to get to the point where you can start to develop that gratitude practice again.
Those are great tips, man. You just gave a lot of golden nuggets right there really quickly. Do you do this with groups or one-on-one or both, or how do you work?
Right now it's one-on-one. I'm developing some group programs. I'm not quite there yet, but right now I work with people one-on-one.
Do you find that, do people tell you that group counseling helps them, or do they feel like working with somebody one-on-one is better? And what's your take on, like, where are you in processing your grief? And I think back to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, people have blessed their hearts, as my mom would say, bless their hearts. She wrote about your own death and stages of grief, and people have taken it to mean that I'm going to have set stages of grief, grieving a loved one. And that's not what she wrote about.
Right.
Do you think it's better to start one-on-one with somebody, better to go to a group? Is it depressing to hear about other people's stories? And you've been in grief groups yourself. How do you know what to do? I talk to a lot of people where I'm just doing the reading. I'm just the medium. I'm not a counselor in any way, shape, or form, but they'll ask, you know, where do I start?
Yeah, it's really up to the individual, and it depends on the group. So there are, everything has pros and cons. So the thing about one-on-one is, you know, privacy. You know, you can say things you might not want to say in front of a group. Let's say you're having suicidal thoughts. Let's say you're feeling guilt about, you know, something that happened with your loved one that you might not want to express in front of a group. So there is that you can do with someone, you know, one-on-one. But on the other hand, humans are communal creatures. We are made to live in community. And we don't like to feel alone. And when you go through, and I work mostly with parents, when you go through the loss of a child, the death of a child, the passing of a child, transition, whatever word you want to use, when you go through that, you feel like you're the only one. You know intellectually you're not, but no one knows how you feel. That's why helping parents heal is one of the reasons why it's so healing. Because we just did our conference in August, and I get goosebumps and a smile on my face when I even think about it. because I'm sitting in a place with 900 people who have all had the same experience. And you sit down at breakfast with somebody, you sit down at lunch with somebody across the table, and you have an immediate connection. And you go deep, like in 2 minutes. You're talking about my child took their own life. My child died by fentanyl poisoning. Something you'd be embarrassed to say in public. And you feel seen, which is a very, very big part of grief. So there's benefits to that as well. So it's whatever benefits you. Now, having said that, there's some grief groups which is people sitting around sad, telling their stories over and over again. And I've been to those. Those are not at all helpful. Those will take you the wrong direction.
Yeah. And a lot of them, before there was helping parents heal, there weren't a lot of places to go and say, I got a sign from my child. It's so cool. Where it'd be celebrated, it would be frowned upon. Oh, we don't do that here. So yeah. This group has been amazing. I was really fortunate to be in the right place at the right time to be part of the startup all those years ago and see it grow from the first meeting of like 50 people in Cave Creek, Arizona, to what is it, like almost 20,000?
The online group, I just heard Irene say today, is like 23,000 people. And I think that's just the online group. It's exploded. Great. Yeah.
And it's a club nobody wants to join. But if you find the right, the gathering, you can just be yourself. And another beautiful thing about that is there's not a lot of comparative grief where people say, well, my child died at this age and yours died at that age. It's a whole different thing. Mine is worse. Or my child died this way and yours died that way. It's a whole different thing. Mine is worse. And I would hear that because I literally worked with hundreds, if not over 1,000 bereaved parents, mainly as a volunteer for years. And they would say, the other places I went, all that stuff was going on. Here, I am safe. So what would you say to someone who wants to be like you and be a coach and wants to be a grief educator because they want to give back because they've been through the journey? How hard is it for you? Does it open up a whole bunch of old wounds for you? Or does it heal you when you did your studies working with people? Do you get triggered? What's the scoop? What's the real scoop on this, Brian Smith?
Yeah, well, that's a great question too. I do not
get triggered. I ask a lot of great questions.
Yeah, I do not get triggered by it at all.
I'm kidding.
It's actually, it's healing. I just took David Kessler's grief educator course. So so he talks about the five stages of grief and he clarifies that. So first of all, it does not apply, the death does not apply to the grief. There aren't stages. It doesn't go in order.
Yep.
But he wrote a book called The Sixth Stage, which is meaning.
Yeah.
I think the sixth stage, if you want to use the term sixth stage, is, once you learn something and you can teach to somebody else, that's the ultimate healing. So for me, it's a healing thing. I love talking to people that are in grief. I love doing this. I love being an example for people. Because I remember when I was a year in, I remember talking to you in that reading when I was like 7 months in. I remember when I first started going to helping parents heal and thinking I have no hope, but I could look at Mark Ireland. I could look at Elizabeth Son. I could look at like Irene Vouvalides, who was there at the time. And I could see that they were healing and it gave me hope. And it's like, so now 7 years later, even though I didn't think I was going to be on the planet at this time, I can help other people. So I love what I do. It's different for everybody, though. We all have different missions, different things in life. And for some people, it's like working at hospice, for example. Some people would say, I could never work at hospice. I couldn't be around all that death. It's sad. But people that work at hospice said, no, this is the best thing ever. I love being around people that are making their transition. I love watching this because they've taken a completely different view. And I love being able to, and we talked with also before we started recording, you and I both come from backgrounds of being preacher's kids. And I always, my grandfather was a pastor, and I always thought, man, I love Pop. I admire so much what he does. And there's preachers in my family, but I can't do that. But I've always felt this calling that I have a message to deliver. And I feel like now finally it's like, okay, here's your message. This is a message for you to deliver.
And this is your ministry. I mean, it's really, really clear that there's been a setup in your life to get you to this ministry. We had different experiences though as the preacher's kid. I was really close to my grandfather, a Presbyterian minister. And when as a child I confessed to him, I'm faking sick so I don't have to go to school because my big mouth gets me beat up on the playground because I couldn't hold back. I would see like a light or a spirit person behind another child, even teachers, and I'd have to say something. And so they called me Crazy Susie. And my granddad helped me out with that. He said, look, this is a gift from God. They're gifts of the spirit. You do want to be careful who you're talking to and what you do with it. But he said the most amazing thing to me, I see these things too. And so that was great. And we had long talks. I spent like every weekend with him as a child growing up. And every once in a while he helps from the other side, but he's busy. He's got a ministry there as well. And I'm sure he wants to enjoy life back home. But you write and speak about toxic religion. And I know a lot of people watching this right now may feel conflicted. Like, is this okay? I mean, grief counseling is one thing, but to say that you found the dime right when you asked for it to have a departed loved one give a sign that they were there, that crosses the line for some people because of religion. What do you say to people that ask you, how do you reconcile that mindset of this is scary, bad, evil?
It's common. You know, unfortunately, on my YouTube channel, especially when I post near-death experiences or mediums, you know, I get this. People, the Bible says this, the Bible says that.
Right.
Okay, I have so much to say about this. We could do a whole podcast on it. So yeah, I'll try to keep it short.
Yeah, we may have to do that.
I'll try to keep it short.
Right.
You know, again, I believe everything we go through for a reason. Because I went through, I studied the Bible inside and out. I've read the entire Bible from Genesis to Revelation. I've read hundreds of books written about the Bible, Bible history. Where did it come from? What are the politics that were involved in it? How was the canon formed? Why did they choose this book versus that book? Once you understand all that, you realize there's more than one way to read the Bible. And people come up and say, the Bible has to be read this way. No, it doesn't. For example, they'll say the Bible teaches us there's an eternal hell. I would say two things. One is, if it does teach that, it's wrong. Secondly, it doesn't teach that. If you read it properly, the Bible does not teach that. When it comes to mediumship, they pick a few verses and they say it says this, it says that. But Jesus was a medium. Jesus spoke to the dead. Jesus brought through the ghosts of Moses and Elijah, you know, on the Mount of Transfiguration. Jesus raised the dead. It says after Jesus was crucified, he went and he preached in hell. So there's more than one way to interpret that. Religion, it actually comes from the Latin word to bind. And to bind can be a good thing. Binding us together as community is fantastic. But when religion binds you from being able to use your own mind and listen to your own heart and tells you that your heart is wicked, you know, that's when it's become a cult because someone's trying to control you. And I that's what I bristle against. I'm not at all against religion. I think religion can be a great thing. And I'm glad for your experience. Again, I think my experience for me was to make me dig deeper, to give me a deeper understanding so that when these people come at me to think I don't know anything about the Bible, oh, just read your Bible, Brian. Just read your Bible and you'll see.
Right. Yeah.
I've read the Bible. Which verse do you want to go to?
You definitely know your Bible. And so obviously you know that the Bible preaches slavery, child sacrifice, animal sacrifice, rivers of blood, a jealous and punishing God. So I think that the source wants us to use our thinking minds, our reasoning and our hearts. So I appreciate that perspective. We're going to have a ton of comments from people who disagree, and that's fine. But for those who are really like teetering on the edge of my heart just wants to know this is okay, I hope that they find a kernel of comfort and truth here, because I got to tell you, the closest I feel to oneness, the unity consciousness and the source is when I am connecting with spirit. Mm-hmm. And if anybody out there wants to feel that, it's through gratitude and kindness. It's like, I am so grateful for what I have, no matter what. I can be kind to someone else And when you're kind to someone else, it's like you plug into universal consciousness. If you want to increase your intuition, be kind, be compassionate to someone else. And I think that, you know, you get stronger. And I've observed you for a few years now, mostly from afar. But, you know, I check on your, you know, what's Brian doing? What's he working on? Who's he interviewing? What's he saying? I feel like you've gotten eminently more intuitive yourself in the last several years from continuing your exploration and curating, you know, your podcasts and all of that. Mm-hmm. Where do you see yourself in 5 years with the work you're doing?
Okay, before I say, I'd like to say something else about the people that are going to be upset about what I said.
Please.
I want to emphasize this. What I believe, what I was taught, was torment for me when I was a child. I was taught that God was going to send me to hell forever if I didn't believe him, that I would be tormented for eternity. And for most people, they hear that and they don't really understand what that means. It doesn't sink in with them. With me, it did. I was a very literal child. And I was scared of God. I loved Jesus, but I was scared of God. And I knew I could never love someone who would torment me or torment someone I loved. Because if he didn't, even if he saved me, but he was going to kill my uncle who died, who was murdered, and they told me my uncle was in hell, I'm like, that's not a loving God. I could not reconcile this.
Is this where your fear of death came from? Fear of weird punishment and you know, someone, a God that would, you know, rain down hell?
My choice was either to believe that they were wrong and there is no God, so I'm going to be annihilated.
Yeah.
Or there is a God and he's going to judge me. And even
and
though I was
fear of death.
I was baptized, I spoke in tongues, I did the whole thing, but I knew that I was taught that God knew my heart. And God knew that I could not love him because I could not love someone who would do that to so many people. I could not make myself love God. Again, wow. I love Jesus. So when people say to me, you know, you're preaching evil, or you just don't understand, I think the blasphemy is saying that God is that kind of a God. I think that's blasphemy.
Okay.
So I'll get off my soapbox.
Hear that. Blasphemy is saying that God is a punishing God. God is a jealous and punishing God. That's the blasphemy, not what we're saying about being helpful, hopeful, and healing by tapping into spirit and recognizing signs, symbols, synchronicities, enjoying dream visits, expanding your consciousness. Okay, I'm going mic drop.
Jesus said, you will know a tree by its fruit. So when people tell me mediumship is evil, I'm like, okay, I've seen mediums heal people, not physically, but emotionally and spiritually. I've seen people get readings. I saw a woman's face just light up at the conference when she got a reading. I mean, I've never seen such joy. And this woman was on crutches and she's dancing. It was like being at a revival. And I'm like, you cannot tell me this is evil. You can't tell me that this is wrong. So I'll stop.
Well, let's go to where you're going to be in 5 years. Who knows? But where do you want to take your work? What do you want to do? How do you want to keep touching the world? Expand your reach. What's the middle game? I'm not going to say end game. We know what the end game is. We return to heavenly home from whence we came.
You know, it's interesting, Suzanne, because my whole life I've been driven. I worked for IBM Corporation. I worked for Sun Microsystems. I've worked, you know, all kinds of computer sales jobs. I own my own business, which we've been running for the last 20 years. I'm getting ready to shut that down. I'm going to do this regardless of where it leads. So I am a person that, like, I look at the numbers. I'm like, how many views I get on my YouTube video and how many downloads am I getting on my podcast? But the real thing is, like, when people reach out to me and say, I saw your podcast and it really touched me, or I read your book, or I gave your book to somebody else and they really helped them out. I was at a wedding a couple weeks ago, a guy that I know a little bit, his niece was getting married. And his son had been killed tragically last year. And he came up to me and said, I read your book and it really helped. And he gave me a hug. That's cool. I'm not saying I don't care where this goes. I'd like to reach more people, But what I've learned from like studying near death experiences and talking to people like yourself who are connected with the other side, that's not the way we're quote judged by how many people we touch. It's the little things that are important. Yes. So I try every day just to touch whoever I can. I had a neighbor stop me a couple weeks ago. Her brother had just passed away the week before. It was a neighbor. I was out. I walked the neighborhood every day, and I walked by her house every day. Mm-hmm. And she stops me and she says, "My brother died last week." And I said, "Okay, I'm really sorry to hear that." And she starts naming off these signs she got from me. I got from him. And she said, "Am I going crazy or is this real?" And I said, "It's real." And as I walked away from her and I explained to her the way this works, and I was explaining to her scientifically why we can, and I got this from Mark Anthony, why we see spirits sometimes out of the side of our eye instead of the front of our eye. And I walked away and I thought, that was good. I did a good thing there.
Yes, yeah, awesome. That's what it is.
And, so that's you know, what we I live hear for. That.
We hear that from the other side that, it's not about how much money you donate. Although, you know, if you got a lot of money, write that check, you know, write a donation to Helping Parents Heal right now. But it's not about that. It's about the cumulative effect of everything you did from kindness and gratitude as a motivation. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's like a welcome home party when you get there. We hear that. Some of the people that you've helped will come right up to you, or you'll see them in the life review, but it goes both ways. You also see, you know, any pain that you cause or whatever. And mm-hmm. we've all done both. We've all, you know, everyday basic people have done great things and have done things that we're not happy about. But the bottom line is it's all about love. And you talk about love and you talk about knowing rather than believing. And that's in your line of work. People want to know rather than just believe. So I want to hear what that means to you. In my line of work, helping people develop their intuition or mediumship or doing a reading or whatever, people want to know that, you know, they can trust that this is really real. It's like they get right. a high, like when they get a sign or whatever, they get this natural high and it only mm-hmm. lasts a day or two. And then they up the ante. I need more, more, more. Is it possible for just anyone to get to knowing rather than believing or hoping it's real?
It is, but you know, you're kind of in our society, you're swimming against the tide because we live in a very materialistic society that's always going to be sending you the other way and telling you that it's wishful thinking and telling you that this is impossible. And so I always tell people, and this again, it goes back to the Bible, you know, you have to renew your mind. So for me, I study this every day. I mean, literally, I'm listening to a podcast. I'm listening to somebody's talk. I'm reading a book, whatever. I'm studying it every day because I want to make it a part of my life. I want to know. For people that can, like, again, take the religion, for example, on faith and believe, like, oh, just because the Bible tells me this or my preacher tells me this, that's great. More power to you. But Thomas went to Jesus and said, "Is it really you?" And Jesus said, "Put your hand in my side, feel my scars on my hand." And we, as a lot of times we're taught in Sunday school, Thomas was a bad person. Thomas wasn't a bad person. Jesus said, "See and believe," which is interesting. He didn't say just believe. He said, "See and believe." So we have an enormous amount of evidence out there. And when I give my presentations, I'm like, I'm presenting you with evidence. I'm not telling you just to believe what I'm saying. I'm saying scientifically, philosophically, every religion tells us the same thing. People that have near-death studies or near-death experiences tell us the same thing. Medium tells us there's like at least five different pillars you can build this on. It's an extremely strong foundation. So yeah, anybody can get to that point. It's a matter of practice. It's a matter of again, studying it. I have a friend, she's a total atheist and materialistic person, professional debunker. She said, "Tell me the best medium you know. Send me, you know, I'm gonna go prove this mediumship thing is not real once and for all." My husband passed away. I said, "Okay," and I gave her my friend's name. And she said, she booked it under a different name. She used a different credit card. And my friend just blew her away. Just
good.
Blew her away. And she comes back, she goes, "Brian, this is real." And I said, "Okay." And I started giving her evidence. So I said, Julie Beischel's done studies on mediums. Gary Schwartz has done study on mediums. You know, read Ken Ring's books, read Raymond Moody's books. You know, there are veridical NDEs. Go to NDERF and read all the veridical NDEs with people. And she came back, she goes, I didn't know all this was out there. Why didn't I know this? And I said, because you're not looking, because no one's told you. So what I tell people, and this is one of the reasons I do Grief to Growth, is because I want people to have hope, but not just because you're believing me. I bring on people that they've been there. They've done that. They've got evidence. You know, it's like I died and I saw what my sister was wearing and I was in Kentucky and she was in Kansas.
Yeah. And now we have the Robert Bigelow essays, yeah. The award-winning essays. I'll link that down below too, but there's so much evidence. The conversation has shifted from, is there an afterlife to what is the afterlife like?
Right.
Yeah. That's a huge shift that we've seen in our lifetime. I want to get to some questions. Okay, so here's a question for you from one of our Carefree Souls community members. And it is, what is the difference between a sign and a synchronicity? I think that's a pretty good question because a lot of people don't know what synchronicity means. It comes from Dr. Carl Jung. What do you say to that?
I wish I could remember his definition, but a synchronicity is a sign. There are different types of signs.
Okay.
Synchronicity has to do with timing. So if
it's two events that are completely unrelated.
That are seemingly causally unrelated.
Yes, causally unrelated.
That have significance to you. So I give you an example of a sign. Shayna, one day, I have a podcast and on my phone, every cover of my podcast was changed to a picture of Shayna, the same picture of Shayna. Mm-hmm. And I was freaking out because I thought, what happened to my podcast? And I'm looking at my phone.
Oh.
So I go to my computer and it's fine on my computer. So it was fine on the internet. It only happened on my phone. Then wow. Later I went back to my phone and the pictures were all back to the way they should be. I have no idea that happened.
Does that make you want to go like this? Like, what?
Yeah.
Reboot so your brain.
That was a sign because it really didn't have any timing necessarily associated with it. A synchronicity would be one morning I get up, I'm going for my walk. I walk 6 miles every morning. I was listening to a podcast right as I walked out of my court, just out of my house. I'm listening to this woman say, one of the signs my daughter sends me is she'll have someone that I don't know come up to me and say, I knew your daughter. And I thought, that's not a sign. Okay, I never thought of that as a sign, but that's interesting. That's an interesting thing, but it's not a sign. Excuse me. So I'm walking down the street, same route I take every single day. I get out to the end of the court. I'm about a mile from home. One of my neighbors walks down her driveway, and I notice she's walking toward me. So I take out my earbuds because I'm listening to music. And I'm like, hi. And she goes, hi, my name is Nicole. My daughter knew your daughter. They were in Girl Scouts together. That was a synchronicity.
Yeah.
If that had happened at any other time, it would just been a random event. But because it happened the day I listened to that podcast, and because I was like, that's not really a sign. And again, that's like, okay, did Shayna put the thought in my head to listen to that podcast? And did she put the thought in my neighbor's head to walk out of the driveway that particular day? I'll never know the answer to that, but I know that was a synchronicity.
Yeah. Something's going on behind the scenes and it's sent by love, with love, and through love, and you receive it. I think sometimes if people aren't open to receive, that their spirit loved ones are kind of like, stand down, not now, save the energy, you know, wait, okay, counting down. It is like they get so excited because they'll come through in a session and tell the sitter, I'm really proud of myself, and I'm really proud of you that you really got that. And another synchronicity example, I know a couple that their son, his name is very unusual. And I can't even think of what the name is right now, but it's not a name you typically hear. And they invited their son in spirit, come to Vegas with us. We're flying out to Vegas. We're going to see a show or whatever. And it's like, they kept running into people that were working in the casino with that name tag with this very unusual name. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it continued all weekend long. Then they got in a taxi to go to the airport, and a guy turned around and said, you know, hi, I'm so-and-so. And they're like, it just continued. But then as soon as they flew home, the plane landed, that was done.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like I went on the whole trip. So yeah, there's many, many types of signs. And we get hung up on languaging sometimes, like sign, right. Synchronicity, symbol, right. Whatever. I think a really great idea that I try to pass along is just keep a notebook, keep a journal of, you know, the date, what happened, and then you'll look back and you'll see patterns and trends and how the communication comes through. And then you've got a keepsake. So then when you've got this really down day, you can go pick up that book and it'll bring a smile to your face to look through at all the things that have happened to you. And so my next question, and I think I'm going to close with this, is what's the next book going to be?
Wow. I don't know if I'm going to do a memoir next, or, you know, it's interesting because the week I would say the day after, but it was actually a week after Shayna passed. It was a day of her service. I got a nudge to start a journal. So I've been journaling my grief pretty much since the day she passed. And at first it was every day, and it's actually, it's on my blog. It's all public. So I'm thinking about turning that into some sort of a collection. So people can kind of see the path that I've taken.
Yeah. Why do you count the days? What's the significance of the days since her passing?
Yeah. You know, because when Shayna first passed, I did not want to be here. So I was counting the days till I saw her again. And one of the things I would do when I would walk, I'd do a walking meditation. I would pretend every step was another day. And I would tell myself, I'm trying to make it another day. And that was like a connection that would make in my mind. And the other thing is, I wanted to just kind of count the sequence. So when I look back, and I just went through my blog a few days ago, and I read some of the early days, day 300, day 400. And I remember what I felt like then and what I feel like now. We can't see progress moving forward a lot of times. We can only see it looking back. And I wanted to, I wanted to be able to journal that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be that, maybe. I'm not really sure. I've got so much I'm working on right now, trying to get some things developed, courses and stuff like that.
And it's hard too, because you get, when you research every day, like you and I do every day, you get pulled in different directions. Like I took a whole year off of individual mediumship readings. I needed a break, and I'm back, which is great. But we get pulled in so many directions. I think, Brian, there's a lot of great things still coming from you that you haven't even foreseen yet. So I'm going to give you that prediction. And I've asked my last question, but we've got a question from a carefree soul here. Joy wants to ask a question, so I'm going to see if I can bring her on. Hi, Joy. What would you like to ask Brian?
Hi. Thanks for bringing me on. I really identify a lot of what you've been saying, Brian. Seems that our histories are pretty similar. I suffered the loss of my husband 12 years ago, and a few years ago, I wrote a book about it. It was a memoir, and I talked about our life together. But toward the end of it, I wrote about the after death communication. In fact, Suzanne was kind enough to write the foreword to the book for me. But my question is, at this point in my grief journey, I definitely feel like I want to pass it forward. And I want to be as educated as I can be, not just from my own experience, that I give the most well-rounded education to people. And so I'm wondering, what is the best way that you think to educate yourself as a grief coach before taking on the next endeavor, which would be to help other people teach, maybe develop a course, which is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. Be careful of the certification thing, because I suffer from imposter syndrome. And I work with people who are very, very well qualified. And I won't mention any names, but somebody that's got lots of letters after her name. And I work with her all the time. And I'm like, okay, I don't have all those letters. So I need to go find a grief certification course. And you can go and you can do that for the rest of your life and never feel like you're ready. If you have compassion, if you have the experience, if you have wisdom, because grief coaching is mainly about listening. I would say that's good. That's a great start. I did, just as I mentioned earlier, I just got certified by David Kessler. I learned a lot, you know, through his program. I've learned a lot. I did some part-time teaching at the San Francisco Theological Society. I've worked with Terry Daniel a lot. You know, it's just practical experience. I do recommend David's course. I know they're getting ready, and this is not a plug. I don't get anything from this, but he's getting ready to start up a certification course, I think, in a couple of weeks. It's a great program. So if you feel like you need something, that's a good one.
Okay.
You end up probably developing like your own format that you sort of learn on the fly too for your coaching sessions, don't you?
Yeah. I worked with Helping Parents Heal for 3 years before I started doing this, and I ran all their online meetings. And so I got to interview people like yourself, you know, like every night. I talked to, you know, hundreds of thousands of parents who are going through the same thing. And so, and I've been through it myself. So I feel like what qualifies you mostly for being a coach, I think, is life experience.
There you go.
You know, that we get, like I said, we get caught up in going to learn from somebody else to get more letters put behind your name, but they don't necessarily know any more than you do.
Okay.
Wow. That's helpful. And one last question has come in from one of the Care for You Souls community members. They want to be anonymous. Mm-hmm. Signs in mediumship helps with the piece of grief that you miss a child, but what can help with the grieving piece of their life that was never lived?
Yeah, that is a great question to end on. And I'm glad you asked the question. All right. So when I had my reading with Suzanne 7 years ago, Shayna was about a month away from getting her her temporary driver's license. In Ohio, it's 15 and a half. She was just a few weeks away from getting that. She was so looking forward to driving. She was a freshman, get ready to go a sophomore in high school. So, you know, I knew she wasn't going to go to prom or anything, but Suzanne told me that she's showing me car keys. She goes, I don't know why she's showing me car keys, because I don't know if they drive in heaven or not. What I've learned from all my studies is that when we cross over, we don't miss this life. We don't miss not going to prom, not getting married, not being able to drive, all those things. Because we have something so much more. This world is a shadow of the next world. We think this is the real world, and we think that is a shadow. It's actually just the opposite. So don't look at them as missing anything. And my daughter, Kayla, who's 3 years older than Shayna, had a reading from a medium, and she's feeling guilty. She's like, I'm going to have to do all this stuff without Shayna. She's not going to be here when I have kids, when I get married or whatever. Shayna came through and said, I will be there with you. Whenever there's a wedding, whenever there's whatever, I'm going to be there. So at my nephew's wedding this past weekend, I'm sitting there. I'm missing Shayna because it's the whole family gathered around. She was extremely close with her first cousin who was there. They called themselves peanut butter and jelly. They're a few months apart. They're that close together. I'm sitting in the pew before the wedding service starts. I look down on the floor. There's a single dime underneath the pew in front of me. So they are still here with us. They're not missing what we're doing. They're not missing what they would be doing. We are eternal souls. This is just a small part of our lives. And when we, quote, die, we close our eyes on this side and we wake up on that side. So I envision Shayna as she's awakened from the dream that I'm still in. So that's how I don't grieve her life that was never lived. I don't grieve that at all. And I don't know what her life would have been like. We don't know. I mean, she had severe rheumatoid arthritis. She was on very powerful drugs. She might have been disfigured. She might have gotten cancer from these drugs. I don't know what would have happened to her. We always imagine their life would have been perfect if they were here. So just that part of it, I've been very blessed. I've been able to set aside.
Powerful, powerful words and a powerful experience. You are a powerhouse, Brian. And I want to thank you so, so much for being so open, so candid, so vulnerable, and yet so powerful. I can't wait to see what you write next, what you do next, but your podcast is the bomb. And you can find Brian at grief2growth.com. Sign up for the newsletter so you don't miss anything, because he's got lots to share. So Brian, thank you for being here.
Just one thing, go to grieftogrowth.com/carefree and I have a gift for you there.
Yeah, you got to get the free gift. I'm going to go do that next. And then I'll probably be so jazzed up, I'll run around the block 10 times. No, I'm just kidding. We all feel stuck and we're going to get unstuck with that grieftogrowth.com/carefree.
Yeah.
Carefree, right?
Carefree, yeah.
Got it. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks so much, Suzanne.